For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Unleashing the Beast. Mark Morano is unleashed on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right. Breaking news. Well, maybe not that breaking. It's not like a primary or anything, but wind and solar are not green. And I wanted to show you this clip. This is from John Stossel, this video that he just dropped in interviews, breaking down just how not green, I guess you can't say ungreen, but how not earth-friendly wind turbines are, as an example, solar panels are, and how all they do is raise the cost of electricity without replacing the fossil fuels that they do. And they also take a lot of fossil fuels and a lot of the Earth's resources to make. This is clip one, roll the tape. This is John Stossel's latest video with a clip from the documentary Juice, Why Wind and Solar Make Our Power Grid Less Reliable. Roll clip one.
California will require all new homes to have solar power.
It's the reason California has the most expensive housing in America. The average house now costs almost $800,000. If you can afford that, you get government money for generating solar power. But the handout mostly goes to rich people, and it's inefficient.
So as their solar panels produce power during the day when the sun is up, they're able to sell the excess power that they produce into the grid exactly when the grid doesn't need it. The grid is then inundated with solar power and can't use it all. Nonetheless, they get paid a very high price for that power. And then when the grid actually does need the power and they aren't producing solar and nobody is producing solar, then they get to buy their power back at a reduced rate.
Nice for homeowners, but of course, poor people who pay rent.
Those people are paying for the rich people to have a highly subsidized solar system.
I put solar panels on my house, partly because of a tax credit. But I won't delude myself into thinking that solar or wind power are especially green. Solar panels and wind turbines impose environmental costs too.
Just to produce one turbine, we have to extract 900 tons of steel, 2,500 tons of concrete, and 45 tons of non-renewable plastic. Then we've got to transport that and burn fuel, getting it all carried across the world and put up. And none of these things that go into a turbine are renewable. They're going to eventually wear out.
Now most shut down in just 10 years to do maintenance that gives the energy company another tax credit.
Wow, what a great explanation by John Stossel in his documentary. The documentary they showed, Juice. Let's just repeat the key line there, because this is at the heart of the entire climate net zero agenda, the UN Paris Agreement, the entire Great Reset, is life can't go on like we've been having it. Life has to be reset. We need radical changes in our life. And here's the kicker. To make one wind turbine, you have to extract 900 tons of steel, 2,500 tons of concrete, 45 tons of non-renewable plastic. Let's repeat that. To make one wind turbine, 900 tons of steel, 2,500 tons of concrete, 45 tons of non-renewable plastic. And they only last about 10 years. And they produce virtually no energy. I think it's wind. The wind is the 4% of total energy of some solar wind. I think it's 3% wind, 1% solar, maybe a little bit higher. The two combined are 5 or 6 as a percent of a electricity. It's still like 13-14%. They always bundle it with geothermal or hydroelectric, and their renewables are blah blah blah. And how renewable does that sound? 900 tons of steel, 2500 tons of concrete, 45 tons of non-renewable plastic. Energy analyst Mark Mills, this was last year, exposed the folly of EVs. And listen to this: to make one EV battery, you have to dig up 500,000 pounds, a half a million pounds of materials to make a single 1,000 pound battery, which is about average for a Tesla battery. Mandating EVs in the U.S. would require 18 times the current global production of cobalt, three quarters of lithium, and half the world's copper and rare earths. China dominates all those markets and will continue to dominate all those markets because we're not allowed to drill here. We have to turn it over. One other point on wind turbines. Leaking oil everywhere. Green wind turbines use oil. Wait, what? How did that happen? An average of 12,000 gallons of oil for your typical wind farm is used. And this is what people, it takes fossil fuels to make so-called renewable energy. So let's get off the nonsensical definitions and phrases. There was that story about, I guess it was Ithaca, New York yesterday, and a shop owner was changing, or apartment owner was changing out all his natural gas and putting in heat pumps and electric, everything going all electric. And he's like, I'm doing this for my children's future. It's like, oh. Of course, natural gas, if you care, was the reason the U.S. led the world in reducing CO2 emissions. And now that used to be known as the clean alternative fuel. And now the environmentalists have turned against that. So it is insane. Well, the focus here today, for my commentary, George Monbiot, this is a UK environmentalist. I've debated him on BBC radio. It would have been 2009 during the Copenhagen UN climate summit. Never actually met him, but we debated over the radio. And I think that was December 2009. And he is an advisor to Greta Thunberg. He's a writer, has been for the UK Guardian. He's sort of the biggest environmental mouthpiece, if you will, in England for activism. And he's a major player in the sense that people listen to him. And here's his explanation. This is part one of George Monbiot telling us why we must end our dependence on farming. It's the title of the video that he released. And this is an interview. And if you watch this, this is a guy not telling you like, oh, you should vote for this, or we should have some serious societal discussions. He's just telling you we have no choice. Just like, Vanessa Carey, John Kerry's daughter, telling us that we cannot, we have no choice in eliminating fossil fuels and going all solar and wind. So this is part one, George Monbiot on what their plans are. And he's very open about it. Clip three, part one.
This country, George, there's a big emphasis on agriculture and how agriculture needs to cut its emissions. And I know it's an issue you feel very strongly about. You've said that agriculture is arguably the most destructive industry on earth. Explain, and do you still believe that, George?
It's by far and away the greatest cause of habitat destruction, the greatest cause of wildlife loss, the greatest cause of extinction, greatest cause of soil loss, greatest source of fresh water use. It's one of the greatest causes of climate breakdown, bigger than transport, one of the primary causes of water pollution and of air pollution. So it's right at the top. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to say land use, the biggest issue of all. It's by far and away the greatest form of land use that humans inflict on the planet, which means all that land is land which can't be used for wild ecosystems. And while obviously we need farming, we need to minimize those impacts. We need to act as drastically within that sector as any other sector to prevent the collapse of our life support systems. And what that means above all else is getting out of livestock farming, is really shutting down animal farming altogether, because that has massively disproportionate impacts on the living planet. And we need to switch towards other sources of food, plant-based diets, which are far more efficient, far lower environmental impacts, but also switch out of farming altogether to produce protein-rich foods, which we can do through precision fermentation, brewing,
George,
microbes.
Yes, he's actually a more of a moderate one on this, because he's not pushing the lab-grown meat or the insects. He's talking about fermentation and plant-based alternatives. But he's basically saying modern livestock farming has to end. We do have to rely a little bit on farming. We can allow a few farms, but they'll be heavily regulated, probably corporately owned and billionaire asset, equity asset backed. This is the exact message, by the way. And don't think, oh, this is just some crank environmentalist who writes for the UK Guardian. Yes, he is that. But Bill Gates, America's wealthiest person is literally, or second, well, I don't know. I'm sure Elon Musk is not going to be in the top five wealthiest for very long when the establishment decides he's got too many contracts with the government, as I've said. Neuralink, space exploration, and Tesla relies on all the government and government agendas. So he's on his, you know, I don't think he's going to become back to the establishment. So I think his being in the top five wealthiest people in the world of the U.S. is going to come to an end. Just, you know, mark my words. And I mean, within 2 years or less. Okay, sorry about that. But Bill Gates is echoing the exact phrase here. So before you just dismiss George Monbiot as, oh, who cares what he thinks? Bill Gates told MIT Technology Review he wanted to end all animal agriculture in the Western world, that we should all be eating synthetic meat. And he's very open about that. And of course, he and Richard Branson, another billionaire, invested in the lab-grown meat, running petri dishes and steel vats and amorphous blob grown up and eventually printed on a 3D printer from the stem cells of cow and sheep and pigs mixed with fetal blood. So, and that's what George Monbiot is saying, is this, the earth can't handle it. As I've said, farming, animal agriculture, been around thousands of years, but 2024, it's over. We can't do it anymore. Okay, this is part two of Monbiot, just a short clip on why this is so important to end our reliance on farming. One last point, though. He did say about using up land. Well, one of the greatest things about high-yield agriculture, which Net Zero is trying to destroy and come after with nitrogen-based fertilizer, is the yield per crop and yield per acre has gone through the roof in the last 50 years. We can produce massive amounts of food on the same footprint of land like we couldn't do 40, 50, 60 years ago. And that is the green revolution. Okay, this is George Monbiot, part two, clip four.
It really does. It's a bit like leaving fossil fuels in the ground. Unless we do that, we've really got very little chance indeed of preventing this domino effect of system collapse right across Earth okay. systems, which basically makes the planet uninhabitable. So eating meat and milk and eggs is an indulgence we cannot afford.
It's an indulgence we cannot afford. And this is, again, this goes to throughout history, the ruling class, global elite, activist, academic, credentialed class, whatever phrase you want to use, the administrative state, have always come up with reasons why the rest of us can't be free, why the rest of us can't make these choices for ourselves, our family. We can't continue. It's not an option. It's just, we can't do it. The earth can't handle it. You've got to give it up. Don't worry. They're going to ferment some food for you. You'll be eating some good fungus and some good lab-grown meat and, of course, some insects. Now, this next clip is Naomi Oreskes. She's a researcher, climate activist. She's a World Economic Forum agenda contributor. This was at the most recent Davos summit. She's asserting that animal agriculture is a major driver of climate change. Once again, we can't continue to eat meat because it's the danger to the planet. This is clip five.
To come back to what Carlos said about agriculture. And this is, I think, really important to understand. And it's a little depressing, but I think if we don't understand it, we can't fix it. So in the case of agriculture, so we know, as you said, agriculture, particularly animal agriculture, is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions, a major driver of climate change. So one thing people can do to help in this case is to eat less meat. So what are we seeing happening in the United States? The agriculture industry is spreading disinformation. But here's where it gets particularly tricky, not about climate change. They're spreading disinformation about the public health benefits of a plant-forward diet.
Already the same battle. Now they're going after farmers, food producers, and they're saying, hey, they're spreading misinformation because they're saying meat is healthy for you, that you should eat meat, and they're denigrating or downplaying plant-based. So what are they going to do? Are they going to start censoring farmers and meat producers because they're promoting meat and that's considered now verboten, given that we can't eat meat because the earth can't handle it? This is coming from Davos. It's coming from Bill Gates, the largest single farmland owner. It's coming from Richard Branson, who's investing with Bill Gates into lab-grown meat. Another one of the largest U.S. farmland owners, by the way, is Jeff Bezos, owner of the Washington Post and Amazon. So it's not, again, like these are just like some, oh, I got some pajama environmental activists and I'm making hay. I'm showing you the power organs of the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, the major media outlets, the world's wealthiest men, the number one farmland owned, single farmland owners in the US. This is consequential. They're warning us. It's not a conspiracy. It's out loud. It's all available. They're telling us exactly what they want to do, what their goals are, the reason we can't live our lives in any way that we can choose. We have to give up our freedom because the earth can't handle it. We're in a climate emergency. And ultimately, it leads to this. This is Nicole Kidman for Vanity Fair. I love this. Pretends to enjoy eating a four-course meal of bugs. This was actually featured in my film, Climate Hustle. But there's the clip, Nicole Kidman, the actress, clip six, enjoying bugs, trying to normalize eating bugs. Take a look.
I'm Nicole Kidman, and I am going to eat a four-course meal of bugs. I am here to reveal my hidden talent, eating micro livestock, cornworms. They're still alive. Extraordinary. Very moist, chewy. Can't quite describe the flavor, but need a little water. Let's try the second course, shall we? Just a little side note. 2 billion people in the world eat bugs, and I'm one of them. Because here we go. Have some mealworms. I'm telling you, I'd win Survivor. That is a fruity taste. I'd recommend it. Here we have. Oh, crickets. Oh, nothing. Oh, awesome. Like nothing you've ever tasted. Like a hairy nut. Don't.
Yeah, it's just like a hairy nut. Oh, that's exactly, sounds great. Let's all gobble that up. This is Nicole Kidman trying to be a trendsetter, trying to normalize the bug eating. She's doing it for the establishment. By the way, where she's from, Australia, they actually gave cricket-based snacks to elementary school kids throughout Australian schools. And the teachers told the kids to go home and pester their parents that eating bugs was fun. And by the way, just so you know, they weren't eating what looked like a cricket like Nicole Kidman was. These elementary school kids in Australia were eating mealworm and cricket-based powder mixed into like a potato chip. So there was grease, fat, seasoning, salt, fried in a deep fryer. So it didn't look anything like an insect, and it just tasted like a yummy junk food potato chip. And of course the kids, it's a psyop, psychological operation on the kids. They're thinking like, hey, I'm in third grade. I tried bugs. They were yummy. I loved them. I went home and pestered my parents that we should be eating bugs. And anyone can buy bugs. In the US, you can get bags of bugs from these bug farms that make it, and they claim to be sanitized and et cetera. But the point here is, they're rationing our food. I just laid out a multi-agenda, major media figures, environmental activists in Europe, followed by the billionaires here in the US, the buying up the land. Lab-grown meat was approved for the first time in the US in 2023, for the first time in our history. Europe is approving, EU's approving insects for human consumption. In fact, the only one I'm aware of is Giorgia Meloni, the prime minister of Italy, who said Italian pasta will not have bugs in it. So give her kudos for that. All right. Before I have one more clip, this is Vivek Ramaswamy, and that's how you say his name. It's not Vivek, it's Vivek like cake. Who may be Donald Trump's vice president. I don't know. I think I'd like him a lot. Again, I don't know enough about his background, how genuine, but his message and who he is and what he says and how he debates reporters, just fantastic. Google recently released a Gemini catastrophe, a wake-up call for woke tech. And I have an Android phone, and I keep getting prompted to install. It's their new AI on Google to compete with Apple phones. But listen to what happened. This is clip two. Vivek Ramaswamy explains a disaster. Google stock's tanking. This has not gone well for Google because of the biased results of the programmers who programmed the artificial intelligence. Clip two.
Yesterday, Google's stock price cratered when it came to light that Gemini, its AI product, was generating images that were wildly off base. And this is probably one of the more interesting business stories of the last year. I want to dive deep into it on three different levels. One is on the programming of the AI itself and what the heck is going on there. Second is the programming of the incentives of Google's own employees. And third is the programming of the incentives of the corporations and their top management themselves. And I'll tell you what I mean, because all three are critical to understand what's really going on here. Let's talk about the AI itself. Here's what happened. When you went into Gemini and asked, "Show me some images of our founding fathers," a curious result kept popping up. The founding fathers weren't white, they were black. Which, there's nothing wrong with being black or white, of course. But one is factually correct and one isn't. And the AI was persistent in its biases across a wider range of categories. What did this reveal? The AI just reflects the biases of its human creators. See, the thing about AI is it's generative. It creates new content that even the human beings didn't directly create using a computer. That's what makes AI different from prior forms of human-operated technology. But that AI, still in its very DNA, almost the way that it thinks, is programmed by the very biases that its creators infuse into it.
And that is artificial intelligence. They can say, well, it's from a computer. It's completely unbiased. All they're doing is woke programmers program in all the crap, and then we get it back, and then they claim, well, that's smarter than a human. You know, are you smarter than an AI? No, but I think we're smarter than the programmers who will lose their jobs unless they follow along with the woke agenda. So kudos to Vivek Ramaswamy. He puts out these little videos from time to time, sort of commenting on especially censorship and wokeness in the big tech world. And I hope he's got a big future, which we can ask. Our next guest after the break will be investigative journalist Laura Loomer. She's a true investigative journalist. She's been down at the border detailing the horrific situation there. And I mean horrific. She's got a video camera, and we're going to show some of those clips. She's also going to talk about Trump. She's a former Project Veritas member. She's the host of Loomer Unleashed. Wait a minute. Unleashed. That name sounds familiar. Wait a minute. That's what this show is called. And that's right. We'll be back with Laura Loomer, investigative journalist. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back after these messages.
TNT's Hervoye Morich.
Trans women's milk, as good as breast milk, says NHS Trust yesterday. Drug-induced chest feeding liquid, comparable to that from mothers when it comes to baby nourishment, claims hospital. An NHS Trust has said that breast milk produced by men is as good for babies as that produced by mother who has given birth. I wonder if I should experiment with that the next time I have a kid. I have nothing. I don't know what else to say. I mean, we're just observing the insanity of clown world. Yeah.
Hervoye Morich on today's News Talk TNT.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most. To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
JDRF's vision is to create a world without type 1 diabetes. The type 1 diabetes community is at the heart of everything JDRF does. We were founded by the type 1 diabetes community. In the main, we are governed by the type 1 diabetes community, we're energized by the type 1 community, and we're accountable to the type 1 diabetes community. It's on their behalf that we exist, and it's on their behalf that we must succeed. JDRF exists to rid the world of type 1 diabetes. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. So for us, that means rallying all the resources and all the people and all the organisations required to make that a reality as quickly as possible. The world's best researchers, exciting innovative companies, and the passion of the type 1 diabetes community, then delivered through the health system so lives get better every day, day after day, until the day we find a cure. to everybody in the type 1 diabetes community. No matter your age or stage with the disease, whether you were diagnosed recently or a long time ago, we need you to know that we are here working on your behalf to deliver a world without type 1 diabetes as quickly as we can. Thank you to everybody who's supported JDRF in so many ways. You are making our vision of a world without type 1 diabetes possible.
Top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed on TNT. Well, we are joined, Mark Morano. We're joined by Laura Loomer, investigative journalist, and she actually has been down on the border. She's a she'll explain all the latest on the Trump campaign, and she's the host actually of Loomer Unleashed, no relation to this show, Unleashed with Mark Morano. But welcome to the program, Laura. Great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
All right, tell us a little about your background. You used to work with Project Veritas, yes. And it says, it says valedictorian of the Barry University in Miami Shores, Florida. You majored in broadcast journalism, and you served as the president of the College of Publicans. So you've been an activist. Tell us how your career in journalism has evolved and what your program's about.
Well, as you said, I went to school for broadcast journalism in Florida, where I was the president of College Republicans. I then went on to work for Project Veritas and James O'Keefe full time, where I was embedded undercover in the Hillary Clinton campaign, exposing fraud and corruption. And then ultimately, you know, I worked for Project Veritas for several years after that, doing this conservative investigative reporting. And then ultimately, I started my own company with a focus on confronting politicians and exposing fraud and corruption, but in a more overt as opposed to a covert way. And then ultimately, I became banned on all social media. I found myself deplatformed on every social media site and really became the canary in the coal mine for all this big tech social media censorship. And then I ran for Congress twice. And now I've just decided that after getting my X account back, after Elon Musk purchased Twitter, I just want to dedicate myself to helping save my country. And the only way that's going to happen is if President Donald Trump gets reelected. And so there's a lot that I could be doing. And I have a lot of skills doing investigative reporting, and I'm using those skills to expose the truth to the people with the hopes that they'll make the right decision and send President Trump back to the White House.
Right. Right. We'll go back. You've mentioned embedding yourself, I guess, undercover in Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign. Tell us a little bit about that. And was it a little sort of related to the Stockholm syndrome? Did you kind of end up liking Hillary or any of the staffers? Were they not as bad as you thought, or was it worse than
you
thought?
Tell us. I was always a Trump supporter, but I was embedded undercover, you know, pretending to be a Hillary Clinton supporter because I was secretly recording her campaign. And so never for a moment would I, you know, did I have Stockholm syndrome or did I ever like Hillary Clinton? It was always just a matter of being deeply embedded for the sake of getting the story. And of course, those investigations into Hillary Clinton's campaign were very effective. And they were even described by CNN as being an October surprise that helped get President Trump into the White House in 2016.
Wow. So, when you started your social media, what exactly, when they started, you said you were the canary in the coal mine. What were the issues that they were coming after? What was their implied or stated justification? And right. I'm assuming only Twitter's or X has let you back on. Any of the others now that you're back on X, does that impact them?
Only X, yes. I've been banned on every other site. So I'm still banned on Facebook and Instagram and PayPal, Venmo, GoFundMe, all these other sites, right? I mean, the list is so long. We'd be here all day if I went through every single site that has banned me. But I was banned for what they called anti-Muslim hate speech. They like to describe me as actually the most famous Islamophobe in the United States, when in reality, I was just speaking truth about Islam, right? I don't think that there's any such thing as Islamophobia, because a phobia is an irrational fear, and it's not irrational to fear an ideology that calls for the killing of Jews and Christians and all non-Muslims, and also seeks to objectify and also oppress women and kill homosexuals. I consider myself to be a human rights activist, and Islam as an ideology is incompatible with our values here in America and also Western civilization. I do not hate Muslim people. However, the media and the big tech social media companies made me out to be this really big boogeyman. And, you know, kind of like a female Tommy Robinson. I got the Tommy Robinson treatment here in the United States. And Tommy, of course, is a good friend of mine. And we talk about this often, how, you know, there are Muslims that like me. They like Tommy. There are Muslims who support me. There are Muslims who voted for me when I ran for Congress. But unfortunately, you know, the big tech social media companies have enormous power, so much power that they were able to steal our election. They were able to deplatform a sitting United States president and interfere in our elections and our discourse here in the United States and all around the world, right? Not just the United States. But that is really ultimately what got me shut down. Also, my support for President Trump.
Yeah. Now, did it surprise you when Elon Musk, first of all, bought Twitter? And did it surprise you when I think he's pretty open. Now, everyone's pretty much been reestablished. I mean, even Alex Jones, I can't think of anyone who hasn't been. But there still seems to be algorithms that suppress. I'm hearing about all that. And I was a little concerned because he hired a World Economic Forum former official to handle a lot of the day-to-day management and a lot of the business end. Do you think X or Twitter is now a model company, or is there still a lot of work to be done?
I'm grateful that Elon Musk reinstated my account. You know, when I was banned, of course, he took a poll. So it was a poll about amnesty for accounts that had been banned. So I am grateful that Elon Musk gave me my account back, but there are some people who still have not been reinstated. I would say that there is some issues still, but overall, it's much better than Twitter 1.0. Under Jack Dorsey, but there's still work to be done. There's still some censorship, and there are some people who still have not been reinstated. It's not perfect yet, but I am grateful that he, you know, allowed me to have my account back. And I was surprised when he purchased it. I thought that it was a bunch of talk at first, but I was pleasantly surprised when he purchased Twitter.
Were you surprised when, I guess, I don't know when, what year now we're talking, but I guess it was shortly after Trump, but when this whole wave of censorship hit, I mean, it was a different America just 10 years ago, just 2015. But what do you make of what all this justification of against and the war against misinformation, disinformation, and the idea that the public can't hear certain facts and hear from certain people? Did that surprise you as a young person? And obviously your generation is heavily reliant on social media when that happened. And it seemingly happened very rapidly. It seemed like within a year or two, it was just all shut down.
Yeah, you know, I predicted this. Like I said, I was a canary in the coal mine, and I had been, you know, warning people about this for some time. I confronted Jack Dorsey when he testified in front of Congress about censorship. I was thrown out of Congress for confronting him during an official congressional proceeding. And I've sued the big tech social media companies. And unfortunately, people were a bit behind me for quite some time, you know, so I was always ahead of the curve. So it's not that I was surprised. I guess I was surprised that people took so long to wake up and they had this sort of crocodile is going to eat me last mentality that really exacerbated the situation. Because if you listen to the video from when I confronted Dorsey in 2018 during the hearing, I said, you know, please help us, Mr. President, President Trump, because they're going to steal the election. They're using censorship and shadow banning to censor conservatives and calling us bots and saying that we're agents of disinformation and, you know, whatever else they want to say about us. But the Republicans dragged their feet. They didn't do anything about it. And then people finally realized, oh, my God, wow, if they can ban President Trump as sitting United States president, then how bad is this? And then other world leaders got to see firsthand, you know, how these companies will interfere in elections. And then you actually had a proper response from people. I'm not saying I agree with their politics, but for example, the dictator of Uganda and also Vladimir Putin, they actually had the correct response to this. And that was, of course, banning Facebook and banning Instagram and banning Twitter from their countries when they decided to interfere in the elections. And that's really what should have happened in the United States of America is once these companies started partnering with intelligence agencies like the FBI and the CIA and DOJ, you no longer are a private company. You become a state actor, and our taxpayer funds are paying for that election interference. So I do applaud, you know, Uganda and Russia for their very hardline stance in addressing this election interference. You know, some people will say, oh, well, how can you praise a dictatorship, or how could you praise, you know, a dictator of Uganda or somebody like Vladimir Putin? Well, look, I think that here in the United States, people have this false reality that we're living under, where they think that we live in a free country and that we have free speech. And we just don't. We don't live in a free country and we don't have free speech. And so perhaps those lies that we've all been force-fed for so long about our country, you know, being the most powerful country in the world, being the moral authority around the world, you know, being a beacon of free speech and liberty, none of those things are true anymore, right? None of those things are true anymore. They used to be. But then, you know, stolen elections have consequences, and that's a consequence of our stolen election. Joe Biden has ruined all of those things.
All right, we'll get to the election in a minute. Back to Jack Dorsey. You know, I remember not the hearing you were at where you protested, but also previous ones. I think he was on some island doing these like recorded or live, but he was on a remote site. He was the ultimate, just sort of the enforcer of the regime, if you will. But I've heard now from so many libertarians, conservatives, like, oh, he's not a bad guy. He was in a bad position. He had to do that. And he's sort of come out now as some kind of free speech champion since he resigned. I don't buy it. Do you buy it? Is Jack Dorsey a free speech advocate or not? And who's behind this rehabilitation of him?
No, I don't think so. Look, Jack Dorsey claims that, you know, oh, well, I didn't know all this was going on. He's the head of the company. So it just shows poor leadership on his part. And look, Jack Dorsey absolutely was aware of the censorship, and he absolutely participated in the censorship. So he can try to rehabilitate himself all he wants, but I don't buy it whatsoever.
Now, you're on the front lines of this social media battle. You see X is back. The other ones aren't. What do you see? Like, if President Trump wins and Republicans can get Congress and Senate, I never put too much hope in the Republicans and the Congress and Senate because they have a way of squandering things. But good that Mitch McConnell's gone. It's good that Kevin McCarthy's gone. I mean, we can only get better from there. But
and Ron Romney is going to be gone in 3 days, hopefully, God willing. She's gone in three days. The resignation, 3 days.
Okay, great. In terms of you know, what we can do, what can the next president, what can the next Congress do to actually make it so that we don't have to live under a censorship regime from all of this big tech, which gets all these benefits from the U.S. government under legislation? What do you propose and what do you think would turn this around and restore us back to a free speech America?
Well, it's difficult to sue these companies, right? We saw this recently with the hearing on the exploitation of minors and children by big tech social media companies. And even Senator Lindsey Graham, you know, who is a rhino in his own accord, said, it's not like these hearings are even accomplishing anything because people are just going to talk and talk and talk about their outrage. But at the end of the day, these companies are protected because of existing legislation like Section 230. So I think that repealing Section 230 would be a good start because we would be able to take away their immunity that they have. Because, you know, as it currently stands, it's incredibly hard and nearly impossible for people to succeed when suing these companies because of the Section 230 protections. And so repealing Section 230, but also too holding these companies accountable for crimes like human trafficking, like aiding and abetting terrorist organizations, which is what we've seen, right? They are already violating laws that are on the books. You don't necessarily even need to create new policies to address these companies. You simply repeal Section 230 and actually apply the law at hand.
Are there votes in Congress to actually do that currently? Say there's a few Republicans, say we hold on to the House, we barely get the Senate. Are the votes there, or is big tech compromised enough congressmen and Republican senators that this is just a fantasy at this point?
Yeah, there should be enough votes, but unfortunately, Republicans and Democrats, even those who like to complain about big tech in their tweets and their press releases, well, if you go take a look at their FEC reports, they're all taking money from Google and Meta and Twitter and all these companies. So, you know, look, it's all a bunch of nonsense. It's all a bunch of talk. And unfortunately, that's all we get with the Republicans, right? It's better than the Democrats, but they're really just one and the same at the end of the day. And I'll never vote Democrat. I'll never be a Democrat. But look, it's, you know, two different sides of the same coin. And at the end of the day, it's a uniparty. It's a uniparty. It's one big party. And we're just not a part of it, or we're not invited, as George Carlin would say. You know, there's Truth Social, and hopefully when President Trump gets back into the White House, there will be less of a reliance on these social media companies, and people won't necessarily need to rely on the social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter to get their information. I'm hoping that Truth Social continues to expand. It just went public. I'm also hoping that Twitter remains a so-called free speech platform. We'll see what happens, right? But as you pointed out, you know, some of the people who have been brought on to X aren't exactly ideologically aligned with those of us who call ourselves free speech absolutists.
Now, I also predicted that Elon Musk, I don't know if his rank is one or two for wealthiest man, but I think in the next couple years, he's going to lose that status. He has too much stuff with government contracts, the space, EVs, that when the regime turns against someone, he's going to start losing stuff and his wealth will shrink. I mean, he's going to have to face that unless he's willing to recant on some of his positions and what he's been doing with free speech in particular. In terms of, like you mentioned, the intelligence agencies, what's going on there? How, you know, up until a couple of years ago, people would be shocked to find out that our deep state intelligence agencies, FBI, defense intelligence, were working hand in hand with media companies to censor Americans. I mean, this is something, you know, I remember during the Bush administration, it was always a question of going after and the terrorists, and we were giving up all these civil liberties, but it was never going to be used against Americans. Well, now they've weaponized the deep state against us. How did that happen, and how do we return that around? And frankly, can one term of Donald Trump actually do that? I mean, there's just so much to be done. How much can he actually get done?
Well, the weaponization and the ability to weaponize really began with the passage of the Patriot Act during the Bush administration, right?
Yes.
And that really created the surveillance state that was used for the sake of what we were told, combating a global war on terrorism. However, now the definition of terrorist has been redefined to include MAGA, ultra MAGA, anybody who supports President Trump or votes for President Trump. And now we've seen like this inverse of reality, right, where Islamic terrorists and sympathizers are not only serving in the United States Congress, but they're being supported by the Biden administration and by the intel agencies, and people that are patriots and people who are anti-terrorism are being called terrorists. So you have to fire the political appointees. Unfortunately, all of these directors, right, the heads of the DOJ, the heads of the FBI, these are political appointees. They're not elected officials. And so you either have to impeach them. And that's hopefully what's going to happen with Alejandro Mayorkas at DHS if the Senate hearing goes as planned, or they have to be fired. And the only way that's going to happen, as I see it right now, because Republicans do not control the Senate, is if we get Donald Trump back into office and he fires these appointees and reappoints new people. That's just the reality of it.
All right, we take a break. When we come back, we're going to get a deep dive into your investigation at the southern border and some of your remarkable investigative journalism covering. I have some video clips of that. We're talking with Laura Loomer, host of Loomer Unleashed, and you can find her at X at Laura Loomer. We'll be right back after these messages, continuing with Laura Loomer.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Last week, Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate for decades, announced he's going to relinquish that leadership position. Nancy Pelosi, when she was Speaker of the House, made the same announcement in 2022. And on MSNBC last week, when she was asked about McConnell, she made it all about herself and the media coverage of the two events.
When I stepped aside, they said she stepped aside, but she's still here. When he stepped aside, end of an era. It's a guy thing, I know. But I have to just say, for women, we want our proper attention, too.
What a narcissist. That was selfish, petty, outrageous, and wrong. Watch.
Tonight, after losing her speaker's job following Republican wins in the House, Nancy Pelosi announcing the end of an era.
President Biden called Pelosi the most consequential speaker in history. Even former Republican Speaker Newt Gingrich said, you could argue she's been the strongest speaker in history.
It was a moment that brought Capitol Hill to a standstill. Members of Congress filling the House chamber to witness the end of an era.
The House will be in order.
If it's Thursday, it's the end of an era for Democrats as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announces she will step aside.
Nancy Pelosi is a narcissistic liar, and the whole media needs to call her out on this, but they won't. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg. Catch my show 9 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, right here on TNT.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country.
And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
Mark Morano is unleashed, and he's taking on the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, and the United Nations on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, we're continuing our discussion with independent investigative journalist Laura Loomer. All right, Laura, you have been doing major exposés and coverage of the southern border. Tell us a little bit about this. You've been down in Panama. You were seeing, I guess, witnessing human trafficking, and you're exposing the lies of the Biden administration about what's going on. Tell us what you're doing at the southern border, what you have been doing.
Well, I was actually in Panama. I wasn't necessarily at the border in Mexico, but I was in
doing at the southern border. What you have been doing?
Well, I was actually in Panama. I wasn't necessarily at the border in Mexico, but I was in Panama for 10 days where I visited the Darien Gap migrant camps. And the Darien Gap, of course, is the jungle, the gap jungle route that is used in between the borders of Colombia and Panama for a lot of these illegal alien invaders to traverse in order to get to Central America so that they can then make their way up to Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala, and then ultimately Mexico. And then from Mexico, they come in either through the Texas border or the California border. And so I was there documenting just the enormous amount of flow, right, of these invaders. And I documented as well NGOs that are funded by the United States government, like HIAS and the United Nations, that are actively facilitating the invasion by giving resources to these illegal aliens in the form of maps, you know, literally giving these people maps with instructions on how they can get into the United States with descriptions and detailed instructions on how to get to certain bus stops and how much a bus ticket's going to cost, and then how they make their way from the migrant camp to Costa Rica. And then, like I said, all the way to the United States. So this is treason. And when people want to know, oh, who's behind the invasion? The United States government is behind the invasion, Mark. We are paying for the invasion with our taxpayer money.
All right, I have a clip one. We have a clip here of the Darien Gap, Panama. Let's roll this tape right now.
You have the light?
¿Quién manda a subir? ¿Quién es lo manda?
Oh, no, estamos turistas y queremos ver los migrantes. ¿Está bien? So, ¿van a Costa Rica?
Oye, tengo que consultarle a la...
Okay. And that's good investigative journalism. You're right there on the scene at night, boarding the bus. You got the was the camera visible, or that was hidden camera footage?
Well, that was actually visible, but it was nighttime. So I had I was in a car actually with my cameraman, and I saw a bus, and I made them pull over. I said, "Get out of the car right now." So we followed the bus, and then I jumped on the bus in the middle of the night, and I saw somebody get off, and you can hear a woman say, "Oh, they're in Fermo," right? Like, she was basically telling me when I asked that they were migrants on the bus, because I speak Spanish as well, that they were sick. Yeah. Yes, it's a migrant bus, but they're all sick. And I jumped on the bus and they were all Africans, all African migrants headed to Costa Rica from the Darien Gap, because from Costa Rica, right, they take these buses for $60 per person from the Darien Gap, Panama, to Costa Rica. And then from there, they go to Nicaragua and they go to Honduras and Guatemala and Mexico. But that's what's happening. People need to see it. That's human trafficking, smuggling people in the middle of the night.
Well, I wanted to show this. This is the next clip is a illegal immigrant who's coming over, I guess named Lenny, who's coming to the U.S. to vote for Joe Biden for president. Let's play this clip. Clip two.
Hi. ¿Hablas inglés?
More or less.
¿Hablas? Okay.
More or less.
¿Cómo te llama?
Lenny. I'm Lenny. Ecuadorian.
Ecuadorian?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you inside the San Vicente camp?
Yeah, if you want.
When did you arrive in Darien?
Yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
So you were in Mama Cucuta?
Yeah.
So you made the trek in the jungle?
No, I walk.
No, but
I don't take the second parabola.
No, but you came here through the Darien Gap in the jungle.
Yeah.
How many days did it take you?
2 days.
2 days.
Two days inside the jungle.
What was it like?
That was awful.
Oh, yeah?
But it's a great experience.
Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, but I lose all my money, too. And now I...
How did you lose all your money?
Yeah.
Did you get robbed?
Yeah.
Who robbed you?
The Indian.
And then you're going to go to Costa Rica? Yeah. And then where are you trying to go after Costa Rica?
Well, tomorrow.
Where... ¿Dónde quieres viajar? Después de Costa Rica.
To Nicaragua.
And then, después, ¿quieres? ¿Qué es su destinación final?
The USA, is it?
I asked him what his final destination is, because as I've been explaining, right, they get dropped off at the migrant camps, either from, you know, they get it to Bajo Chiquito, and then they get taken to Lajas Blancas or the San Vicente camp right here down the road where he just came from, which is right next to my hotel. And then they get on a bus, they pay $60 to $70 to get on a bus to Costa Rica, and then they go to Nicaragua, and then Honduras, right?
Yeah, El Salvador. I went to go to El Salvador.
Wow. So basically, they just sort of stair-step their way right to the U.S., and I love the idea of, like, well, where are you going? Oh, I'm just going to Nicaragua. Well, where about after that? They don't want to tell. So is there such a thing as replacement theory when you watch this? Is that a conspiracy theory? Is that racist to even ask that question? What's going on there?
No, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because I'm actually going to be making a documentary about this as well. And, you know, I haven't really announced this anywhere, so I guess I'd be announcing this here first, but I was going to be announcing it on my show tomorrow. But I'm actually going to be making a documentary about the Great Replacement Theory. But it's not a theory, right? It is a great replacement. Yeah. And I just found that the footage that I captured while I was there was so significant, and it was so powerful and so impactful that a movie needs to be made about this. And so I will be making a movie about, you know, about the process of, and how this invasion is facilitated and funded by the United States government via the NGOs, and to show people we are being replaced. We are being replaced as a people and also as an electorate. This is an electorate strategy by the Democrats and by Joe Biden in an election year to try to displace majority populations and replace us with a class of third world invaders.
Yeah, in fact, the LA Times 2014, in my world of climate, Bill McKibben, a climate activist, actually said he wanted more immigration from the southern border because the Hispanics that were coming up would be more likely to vote Democrat. He said this in the pages of the New York Times, and it would displace white Americans who were voting for white climate deniers. So even in the climate world, they openly talk about the replacement. They want to replace the voters who vote for climate skeptics with Hispanics who will vote Democrat, and that's where they want more immigration. So that would be great. Now, We only have about, I guess, a minute left here. So just tell us where you're doing this documentary. You're working on President Trump. You're working to get him reelected. Do you think Trump can win given, well, let me ask you, we reverse the question. Have there been substantial election reforms to where you think Donald Trump could actually be declared the winner in 2024? Or are we going to face a repeat of 2020 is my question there.
The reality is there really hasn't been a lot done to address the theft of our election. And it's unfortunate, you know, that's failed Republican leadership and a lot hasn't been done. But I am very confident that President Donald Trump is going to be the next president and he's going to win for a third time. I mean, look at he absolutely dominated last night in Super Tuesday. Nikki Haley finally dropped out today. And I do believe that President Trump is going to win in 2024. And if he doesn't, well, then people can kiss America goodbye because that's the end of America and Western civilization as we know it if he does not get back into the White House.
All right. Thank you very much. Laura Loomer. She's available at Laura Loomer on X. Is there any website or anything else you want to give out?
People can follow me at Laura Loomer on X and Truth Social. And then my website is loomered.com. And my Rumble channel is rumble.com/Laura Loomer. Every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, I go live. So be sure that you subscribe to me on Rumble. And tomorrow I will be premiering the teaser for my documentary.
All right. Thank you very much. Laura Loomer, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano. See you next time on TNT.